Welcome to the From Burnout to Recovery Show with your host, Dr. Kate. This is where your journey to burnout recovery starts. Are you feeling overwhelmed or like work has become unmanageable? Join me and my guests for open and honest conversations about burnout recovery from the comfort of the front porch. I am here to help you build your resilience and prepare you for burnout in a whole new way through a variety of perspectives. Move past the idea that burnout can only be addressed by avoidance and work to integrate recovery into your daily life. Relax, take a breath. The From Burnout to Recovery Show starts now. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the From Burnout to Recovery Show with Dr. Kate on Transformation Talk Radio and member of the Cornelia Stephanie Media Group. I am your host, Dr. Kate, and I am excited to welcome you to the show today. As you are enjoying the show, remember to hit that subscribe button and download the KS Media Group app for all the world's best influencers in one place. Today, we are going to be joined by our guest, Dr. Vijeta Singh. Dr. V is a clinical psychologist who helps people transform their lives by learning to have connected, healthy, and joyful relationships. A nationally known expert with over 15 years of experience, she received her PhD from Columbia University and is a supervisor at Mount Sinai Hospital and Teachers College, Columbia University. Born and raised in India, she is bilingual and has a deep understanding of cultural and social issues as they relate to work, career, marriage, and parenthood. Her astute advice has been featured on multiple media outlets, including TV, radio, and podcasts. Dr. V, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dr. Kate. I'm so happy to be here.
I am delighted to have you here with me. So to get us started, if you would just tell us a little more about yourself and your journey with burnout and burnout recovery.
Sure. So I started this whole process, this whole journey, and what I do is I help people do relationships better, and that's really my focus. And so it's so much of life is about being able to enjoy our experience. Like, we want to enjoy our time here, right? We're here for a limited amount of time. We want to enjoy our time here. And so much of this is helping people learn to thrive in their relationships and not just survive them. Mm-hmm. So my own journey kind of started when I was an undergrad in India, and I was really interested in psychology. And I thought that that was the thing that called to me the most, the idea of being able to understand people, to find out what incentivizes them, what motivates them, why do we do the things that we do, mm-hmm. how do we come to become who we come to become. So it all started there. And, you know, slowly but surely over time, we start accumulating our experiences, and as you know, the whole process can be so long and cumbersome. The journey to becoming a psychologist is a long and tiring one. So as I got to the other side, right, like just crossing out the checklist and doing the things and everything that I needed to do to get from one step to the other to the third, and I got to the other side and I finally started my practice, I realized that there were so many things that I didn't have in place yet. And that, you know, whatever I did have, that felt shaky too sometimes. And so it was with that humble beginning that I very quickly found myself, especially with COVID and everything that started happening around the same time, where it just felt like, now what? Now, how? Now, where do I take myself from here? And how do I help people while I'm still helping myself? So I wouldn't say that it, I wouldn't necessarily call it burnout because I was so close to getting there. But if I had continued the way I was and not changed things around and not being able to listen to what I was hearing from within me, I for sure was headed in that direction.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Oh, that. I think that says a lot, right? And you said something that I think our listeners will definitely attach to. I definitely did. And that was that piece of, okay, how do I help myself while I'm helping others? And I think that recognition is so incredibly important. And I think sometimes as helpers, we don't quite get to that space. Talk to me a little bit more about that recognition in yourself. What were some of the things that you recognized for yourself to know that you were on a path that you wanted to turn around?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when I first got started, there was a lot of confidence and there was a lot of ambition, a lot of drive, and a lot of those things were leading the bus. And all of those things were good. But I think underneath somewhere, I was still struggling with feelings of unworthiness and feelings of not feeling good enough, right? Despite the fact that I had all of these accomplishments, despite the fact that I had achieved so much and done so many things that were important to me and to other people, but I was still struggling with that sense of unworthiness and not feeling good enough. And I think that when it lingers, when it's there, it can be the breeding ground for so many other things, because I think that we find doing as a way of compensating for being, right? Doing more is not being more. Doing more can never be being more. But as long as we make that the focus and we keep that as the emphasis, and I think it's so easy to do that, especially in this profession, which is focus on other people, focus on doing more for others, right? That becomes a language that we can learn to speak. And then that can really get us into so much trouble.
Yeah. Yes, that piece of, it's so important to remember that the doing doesn't make the being, that doing more doesn't mean that you are more, that you become more in those aspects. What are some things that you do for yourself to avoid the space or keep yourself in recovery when it comes to burnout?
Yeah. So I always think of what Wayne Dyer said, you know, Wayne Dyer, the great psychologist, but self-help author and spiritual guru. And he basically said that the greatest hunger of all is the hunger for meaning, right? And I think that as long as we strive for meaning, we strive for what is it that we're here to do? What is our purpose? Why am I here? And I think that quest, that trying to answer that question for myself, because I think the answer looks very different for all of us. The meaning that we derive from our lives, what's important to us, what are our priorities, what are our values, what are our goals, all of those things, you know, are so different for all of us. And so I try and use that as a way of defining my purpose and my mission. And that really helps me from not feeling like I need to constantly be doing in order to be more. So I find that very helpful, and keeping that in the backdrop of my mind that I am enough, that you know, just being here is enough. And as long as I'm breathing, I'm enough, right? But I think that we get so caught up in the narrative of the hustle culture and wanting to put ourselves out there and wanting to get recognition, admiration, whatever it is, right? All in that quest of trying to fill those gaping holes and wounds that we carry, that then it just kind of becomes a vicious cycle. So I think for me personally, reminding myself the meaning of being here and what's important to me helps me stay on track.
I love that connection with, you know, what is my purpose? What is, you know, what is my meaning for being here, and those kinds of things. For some of our listeners that might be just now exploring, like, what is their why? What is their purpose? What are some things that they can use or tools that you have used to help you on that quest?
Yeah. I wish there was an easy answer to that, right? Like
something I figured it was probably like, you have to reflect and figure it out, but you know,
Yes. And it is a little bit of that, which is, it is going into that journey with yourself. I think the reality is that not all of us understand ourselves. Not all of us enjoy our own company. Not all of us have the willingness or the desire to get to be really intimate and familiar with ourselves. We're desperate for intimacy with other people, but we have a complete lack of desire, lack of curiosity about ourselves. And I think that does us a real disservice, because if we don't know who we are, if we don't know what we're about, how can we possibly be anything with anybody else, right? So it's a lot about figuring that out for ourselves. So the journey of kind of discovering ourselves is really important. And there are a lot of different ways to do it. We can do it with therapy, and that's a great way to do it. And we can do it with emotional awareness, which is just learning to be with our emotional selves and our emotional states. Because I think that as easy as that sounds, there's a lot that we do to make sure that we're as far away from our emotions as possible. So the more we learn to sit with ourselves, the more we learn to tolerate our own company, the more we learn to enjoy our own company, the happier we can be in that process.
Yeah, I think there's that is a space where the doing is really important, and getting into that space. And I think spending time with ourselves can be a little complicated for some people. What is something that you might suggest for someone to do to start that process for themselves?
Yeah, I think the first and foremost thing is just learning to be aware of whatever emotions come up for us in the day. Because we all have emotions, they're always there. And sometimes we feel them more intensely than others. But there's a way to experience feelings without marinating in them. You know, experiencing feelings does not mean drowning in our emotions. It means just creating space for emotions to speak to us, for them to be able to carry the information that they need to, for them to tell us what we need to hear, because our reactions and our emotions aren't always accurate. It's not like they're always telling us the right thing. But when we start making space for them, when we start giving them the opportunity to speak to us, we get better at knowing what's healthy, what's not healthy. I think the problem becomes when we start very quickly distancing ourselves from our emotions, because our emotions don't always feel good. Mm-hmm. They don't always have that feel good factor. In fact, sometimes they make us quite miserable and sorrowful, and we want to have nothing to do with them. And so I think that balance can be very tricky between learning to appreciate our emotions and be able to take the information that they give us, but not be too carried away or drawn into the depths of despair by them either. And that's where, you know, practice is really good. Spending time with yourself is good, and getting help is really good.
Absolutely. Yeah. Spending time with yourself, getting help when you think that you're struggling with that a little bit on your own. I think you said something that resonated with me quite a bit, and that with the space of, you know, we experience our emotions but we don't have to marinate in them. And I'm not sure that we always remember that sometimes. I think that sometimes we experience an emotion, we can almost feel stuck in it sometimes.
Yeah. The reality is that I think, you know, the mind, as bright and brilliant as it is, and it is a space for imagination, creativity, also produces a lot of unwanted thoughts, right? And a lot of it kind of reflects in our emotional space, because our thoughts then point to how we feel about things. We have thoughts about things and they generate feelings. But the reality is that not all thoughts are helpful or important. Mm-hmm. So when we give our mind a lot of credit, while we can give our mind a lot of credit for being this place from where so many fantastic things are born, we also have to realize that there are times when we have to take things with a pinch of salt, and not everything that is generated out of the mind is something that we need to pay attention to or that's important. So this is where we have to be really careful about what kind of thoughts do we pay attention to? What kind of thoughts do we allow to control how we feel? And what are the thoughts that we have to be willing to let go of, because they don't serve us and they're not purposeful, but they're driven from anxieties and fears and insecurities, right? They come from another place. And again, knowing that distinction and being able to distinguish between, these are the thoughts that are important. Mm-hmm. They motivate me. They help me accomplish my goals. They take me places. They help me feel good about myself and other people. Those are different from the thoughts that are all shrouded with our insecurities, right? And remind us of what imposters we are, remind us of how unworthy we are. And those are the ones that we have to give less importance to and learn to drown out those voices. So having a sense of our emotions also means, which of those thoughts are we allowing to kind of move away from us, and which are the thoughts that we're holding on to that generate all of these emotions that we feel?
Yeah, I think that, yeah, that's so incredibly important. And I know I've done a lot of work personally in that regard. Like, is this a helpful thought? Is this an effective thought? Or is this a thought that is coming from a space of fear or shame or doubt or something to that effect? And I know I've done a lot of reflecting to get to that space to really recognize the difference. But for someone who's just starting out, what are some ways that they can help start recognizing the difference between those two types of thoughts?
Yeah. Some of us experience patterns in our thoughts, which surround certain themes, right? And for some of us, that could be about our bodies, For some of us, it could be about our academic achievements. For some of us, it could be about our career, professional. We all have those places that we feel ashamed of, that we feel embarrassed about, that we feel we're not good enough, right? It goes mm-hmm. back to that idea of not feeling good enough. And so if we can establish the themes that we tend to feel most, that are like our Achilles heels, the places that we feel most sensitive, then those are things that we have to be careful that when we have thoughts that kind of churn out of that space, mm-hmm. that we don't give them too much importance, mm-hmm. that we don't allow those thoughts to hold meaning for us or take us through our day, that those are thoughts that we're willing to let go of because we know that they come from a place that has meaning for us, but not meaning in a good way, mm-hmm. right? So that's one way of identifying which thoughts to hold on to. But the other way is go on your own, you know, do your own research, like see how you feel about the thoughts that you have. Mm-hmm. See which do the thoughts that you have, do they really inspire you? Do they motivate you? Do they take you to the next place that you need to go? Or do they bring you down? Do they make you feel ashamed, embarrassed? Do they keep you stuck in the cycle of, you know, of avoidance and regret and all of that? So some of this is, again, being curious about your thoughts, mm-hmm. right? Developing that curiosity about, is this thought, like you said, is this thought helpful? Is this thought productive? Is this going to take me somewhere that's that I need to go? Or is this going to be just more of the same where it just makes me feel crappy about myself? And then I'm just stuck in the cycle and spiral of, you know, shame and doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate both of those pieces. I heard, you know, a couple of questions that I sometimes use myself and maybe, you know, our listeners can use to ask themselves when they're trying to assess these thoughts. And that I think the piece of where is this thought coming from, like what motivated this thought in that piece and what impact is this thought having on me right now? Where is this thought going? And is that a space that I want to go to?
Yeah, because I think that we also live in a world where we want to be able to, we want to have control and we want to be able to take charge, right? And I think we're so thirsty for control. And I think this need for control also comes from a place of feeling so uncertain about uncertainty. We don't like uncertainty. It makes us uncomfortable, and especially if we are dealing with our own sense of unworthiness and less thanness, then uncertainty feels even more powerful and even more dangerous. Mm-hmm. So when we're grappling with that and we're grappling with wanting control, then we can employ all kinds of things in the service of trying to have more control, right? All the things that we kind of latch onto, whether it's like perfectionism or trying to do more, to take more on as a way of feeling more worthy, or trying to do things in the way that we think will get other people to like us. Mm-hmm. Or judge us less, or maybe admire and appreciate us. And then we start getting caught into all kinds of games, right? Whether it's getting too concerned about how other people's opinions about us, or getting too concerned with trying to be a certain way, losing mm-hmm. our own voice, losing our own imperfections, right? By trying to embrace this idea of perfectionism. Mm-hmm. So we can go into so many places, can take us so many different journeys that we don't want to, you know, those rides we don't want to get on.
Yeah. I love the piece that you just brought up in regard to kind of the losing of ourselves in that piece, but attaching it to when we lose sight of our imperfections, or when we lose our imperfections, that really does create a space where we're no longer authentic, and we do lose ourselves in that aspect. And no, I've definitely been there in relationships where I'm working so hard to be the person I think they want me to be that I completely lose sight of who I am and the imperfections I have that make me me. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's an important piece for, I think, our listeners to hear, in that your imperfections is what makes you, you and your unique you. That's the special part of you.
Absolutely. And the more we learn to embrace our sense of imperfection, right? Which is that this, that who I am, if who I am is enough, mm-hmm. then I am the way I am, and that means that I'm imperfect. Now, I'm not saying that that's a that that's a ticket for behaving badly or doing things impulsively. You know, sure. That I
appreciate
who I am
you brought that. Yeah, me. You're like, hang on a second. There's still a limit.
Yes, exactly. So this is not a license to just do whatever, be whatever, right? But this is the idea that if you are embracing life with the idea that who you are is enough, then you can embrace the fact that you have flaws, and mm-hmm. that it's okay to have flaws, and that we all have different things about us that are work in progress. As long as we can appreciate that and make a commitment to work on some of those things, right? Embracing your imperfectionism is not saying I am fine the way I am and that's it, and you know, either love me or leave me kind of thing. Yeah. But it's about saying that this is who I am. This is the uniqueness that I bring to the world. This is my particular gift to the world, is my unique voice. Mm-hmm. And it's not for everybody, right? It doesn't have to be for everybody. So this is where, you know, we have to drop the people pleasing aspect of things, which is mm-hmm. I cannot be all things for all people. Yeah. That I will only appeal to a certain kind of person who likes what I have to offer. And that's totally fine, that we don't have to go win a popularity contest with everybody else. So when we're willing to do that, then we can really own our voice. And when we can own our voice with courage, from there can come great things. Mm-hmm. But if we own our voice with shame and doubt and insecurity, then we're likely to get, you know, stuck in that judgmentalness of ourselves and then judgmentalness of other people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. You talked a little bit about like the people pleasing. And I think that I know I work with a lot of helpers. I am a helper myself. I think you're a helper as well. And I think within the helping professions, like we tend to get into it and we can kind of be people pleasers in that aspect. So for those of us that may be more challenged with people pleasing than others, what's something that we can do to help ourselves step out of doing that?
So, you know, Rabindranath Tagore, who's an Indian poet, once said that it's very simple to be happy, but it's very difficult to be simple. Mm-hmm. Right? It's mm-hmm. so hard to just keep things simple, focus on the minimal aspects of life and not try and throw in frills and bells and whistles. Yeah. And I think when we try and do that, when we start trying to attach things on ourselves that we're not, when we start taking things more upon ourselves, you know, putting on shoes that don't fit us, or trying on outfits that, you know, don't look good on us, or even hair or makeup. And I'm using these ridiculous examples, but I think it's what I'm trying to say here is that learning to be who we are means that we don't need all of these embellishments, mm-hmm. right? We don't need mm-hmm. all of these additional extra things that we can just be okay with how we show up in our uniqueness. And that can be the gift. Mm-hmm. But I think that people pleasing is so enticing because it creates this false illusion of love and respect and safety, mm-hmm. which is such an illusion. It's you know, people see through it and people don't appreciate it because we end up being superficial around other people, right? And people who are smart can see through it. They can mm-hmm. see through the superficiality of trying to be all things for everybody, or trying to extend ourselves in ways that we don't feel comfortable, or when we don't say no, and then we're resentful, and then we're passive aggressive with people. Right. So I think that we then start speaking in all different kinds of ways that then people can pick up, and then those things don't add up and they don't match and they keep us feeling miserable as well.
That is powerful. I think that the piece of being at peace with yourself, and that you don't need, like not needing the extra embellishments of life and those kinds of pieces. But I think really the piece of like people pleasing, and that it sets up a false reality almost, in that it's this false sense of love and respect. And that's not actually what we're getting when we give in that way. That I think is incredibly important. I am absolutely adoring our conversation, and I'm definitely taking a bunch of things away from today. And listeners, if you are as well, remember to hit that subscribe button and be sure to share this with someone else who also needs to hear these messages today. Dr. V, before we wrap up and I head into our recovery moment, what is one piece of advice that you would like to share with our audience?
I think the one thing that I would like to say, which maybe I alluded to before, is developing more gratitude, learning to develop more gratitude and developing more self-compassion. Because I think that when we can be happy with our lives as it is, as it's unfolding, as imperfect as it is, as miserable as it might be, but when we can see the places that are working, the places that are good, even amidst chaos and uncertainty and everything else, we learn to start having an appreciation for life on its terms and not the way we want to see it. I think that we generate a whole lot of unhappiness for ourselves when we try and make life be a certain way that it's not unfolding out to be, right? So this idea of this is what I want life to look like. And then when life is not looking like that, I'm feeling a whole lot of unhappiness. So when we can start seeing life on its terms, when we can really accept that even within the stuff that's not going well and the moments of pain and the moments of shame, that there can be moments of happiness and satisfaction. Having that appreciation and developing that gratitude for life really allows us to then just calm down and not get too caught up into the cycle of control and wanting to manipulate and wanting to have certain outcomes and wanting things to go a certain way, right? Because we've gotten so used to wanting things to be a certain way. And we've almost gotten spoiled because it's like, you know, at the moment's notice, you have things to your access and we've learned to just kind of want and it's there, right? And I think that that's the lesson that life teaches us continually, especially in this pandemic year, is that nothing is in our control, that nothing is predictable, that chaos is the reality, like that nature is full of chaos. I mean, in the world, in the real world, away from humans and suburban urban living, animals live amidst chaos. That's how they live. There's no predictability to their day, right?
Right.
So we've created this illusion of predictability and control, but it's meaningless because in the larger scheme of things, there's, you know, we can't control what's outside. We can only control what's inside. So gratitude and self-compassion go a long way in creating that change where we can let go of control.
Oh, thank you for that. Yeah, I know for me personally, incorporating a practice of gratitude and striving for more self-compassion has made a world of difference in my life and how I view things and how I react to the things that are happening around me. So I'm just delighted that you brought that up again for our audience members. Dr. V, where can our audience learn more about you?
Sure. So I'm on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn and social media. And my handle is at Vijeta Singh. So it's at Dr. Vijeta Singh, which is a hard word to kind of spell out, but hopefully
we'll put it in the show notes, dear listener. Yes, that you can check there.
Yep.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me today on the show.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure being here.
What a fantastic conversation with Dr. V and so many great tidbits. And to continue along with the alignment of gratitude and developing self-compassion, our recovery moment today is going to be on heart-centered gratitude. So remember that I want you to be in that safe space before we get into the recovery moment. And if that's not you to actually do the meditation at this point, just listen, come back to me later. And you can always come back and listen to this at another time. But we're going to go ahead and get started with our heart-centered gratitude meditation. So we will be focusing on the heart, inspiring deep appreciation to flow within and without. Begin to settle in and disconnect from the outside world. Feel relaxation beginning to flow through you as you take notice of your breaths. Allow your eyes to close when they're ready and make an effort to relax your body even further, sinking deeper into your cushions or simply allowing your body to become more limp. This is a great opportunity to check in and make sure that you are not holding on to anything that's bringing the body tension or stress. scanning your body and taking the time to soften any knots or tension. Taking a deep breath in and out, releasing any tightness. Another deep inhale and slow exhale, releasing tension. Once more, slow breath in. Hold for a few moments as you reach the top of the breath and let it out as a contented sigh. Now shift your attention to your thoughts. You may find that your mind has become more calm as your body has become more relaxed. Encourage this awareness, going with the flow, slow breaths in, long breaths out, as your thoughts continue to still. Deep breath in and release, releasing any scattered thoughts. Another slow inhale and long exhale, releasing once again, letting go. One more deep breath in, hold for a few moments, and let it go. Bringing deeper stillness to the mind. Now, I would like you to shift your attention to your chest. Breathing easily, focus on your heart. We often take the heart for granted, going about each day without noticing all the work it does for us. You may place one or both hands on the chest if you would like, feeling each heartbeat, hearing each heartbeat, simply connecting with this miraculous, living, moving heart that brings life into every part of your body. What thoughts come up as you connect to your heart? What sensations arise? Positive or negative, allow everything to surface. Imagine a bright green night beginning to glow beneath the surface, glowing from inside the heart. See this light in your mind's eye. What does it look like? What does it feel like? This is the energy of compassion. Imagine the green glowing, flowing through all the channels, vessels, and cells of the heart, cleansing and healing, offering compassion to everything it touches, shining the light on old hurts, resolving past grudges, clearing away anything that brings heaviness to the heart. As the light does its healing work, bring to mind the beautiful sensations that this green hue inspires in you. The deep renewal freshness, like new buds shooting up through spring soil. Breathe in the aroma. Green also brings harmony into our lives, balancing giving and receiving and inspiring our hearts to thrive and find fullness. With the next few deep breaths, hold this color deeper into the lungs and heart, grateful for its presence, breathing in green, breathing in harmony, healing, balance, and rejuvenation. Now, envision a golden light circling your heart, swirling through the green color. Take a few moments to connect with the gold. What does it look like? What does it feel like? Feel the color emanating from your heart, glowing from your chest and spreading throughout your body. The gold inspires gratitude in the heart, carrying that gratitude to every part of you, saturating the body mind, and spirit with strength as well. Feel the gold working with the green to heal all the shadows of the heart, relieving it of any heaviness, infusing it with courage and strength. Imagine the gold becoming more rich and vibrant with each inhale, going deeper into the heart with each exhale. Inhaling, breathing deeply into the chest, and exhaling, feeling the gold throughout the heart and lungs. Another inhale, deepening the color, and exhale, feeling it heal and strengthen the heart. When your heart is healed and open, it becomes easier to let gratitude in. Using breathwork and visualization, you have now reached a state of open-hearted awareness. Connect with this awareness, taking note of how you feel right now in this moment. Hold your hands to your chest. Once again, noticing your heartbeat. How does your heart feel now? Sit in stillness for the next few moments, continuing to allow gratitude to pour into the heart, breathing in and breathing out. Now, release the colors, letting the green and gold fade into white and then disappear completely with your next long exhale. Bring your awareness back to your surroundings, opening your eyes when you're ready and giving your body a nice long stretch. Grateful for this opportunity to heal the heart. I am so thankful and grateful to each of you for joining me and my guest, Dr. V, and for the amazing offering and insights that she offered to us today. Remember that for more recovery moments, you can follow me at Dr. Kate Steiner on Instagram, and be sure to subscribe to the From Burnout to Recovery show on YouTube. I'm grateful for each of you for listening. Thank you for joining me today on the From Burnout to Recovery show with Dr. Kate on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Dr. Kate, and I wish you peace on your journey. Thank you for joining me on the front porch today. Remember to download the free Burnout to Recovery Reflection Journal on my website, drkatesteiner.com. And be well, my friends. Thank you for joining me, Dr. Kate, on the From Burnout to Recovery show, where you are starting your journey to burnout recovery. You are invited to join me on the front porch every second and fourth Friday of the month on transformationtalkradio.com to continue growing in resilience and integrating recovery into your daily life. If you would like to learn more or find out how to work with me, visit liftwellnessconsulting.com.